okay, jump off this building and look pretty. You have one shot. Go.
Welcome back to Class of 03, the podcast about the year 2003 and all the ways it's still relevant today. I'm your host slash classmate, Helen Grossman, and this week our subject is the face that launched a thousand reality shows, Tyra Banks and America's Next Top Model. In the first moments of the first season, or cycle, as any true ANTM head would tell you, Tyra Banks tells us that she started this show to help people understand how to get into the field of modeling. She and her production team launched a nationwide search and received thousands of audition tapes to take someone from obscurity to fame in just 8 weeks. She says, "I'm looking for originality, for creativity, for humor. All colors, all shapes, and all sizes. Some of these girls you would not look twice at on the street, but all know when I can make them into something." For all of Tyra's promises of a cast with all colors, shapes, and sizes, the final three women on cycle one of ANTM were strikingly, but not shockingly, similar. They were all very tall, very, very skinny white women whose primary difference was their religious affiliation. The show was canceled after 15 years in 2018, but its lexicon and its lessons are still very much alive to anyone who ever watched the show and believed that they too could be plucked from obscurity. If only Tyra saw something special in them, if only they smized so fiercely that their raw beauty was undeniable. In its early days, its heyday, the show set and reinforced beauty standards and created this kind of blueprint into how to become a model. And I don't have any research evidence or polling data or Pew Research Center studies to prove this, but I suspect that the show really affected the psyches of young people watching it, as well as the way that those same people would eventually learn to represent themselves on social media. That's just my hunch, though. The truth is, the winners of America's Next Top Model were always the ones who made themselves in Tyra's image. The ones who didn't cry during their makeover, who accepted whatever horrifying challenges they were placed in, who took feedback like, "Your accent is horrible," or "You walk like a man," and embraced Tyra's vision of what they had to endure in order to make it in the industry, without question. But Tyra, she wasn't the only one molding things into her image when America's Next Top Model began in 2003. That year, there were monumental and important strides in science around cloning. Yeah, I did just make that leap. So cloning obviously didn't actually start in 2003, but it was a surprisingly big topic of discussion in scientific communities, as well as in the US government and in the United Nations. Let's backtrack a few years from our usual backtrack to 2003 and talk about the birth of Dolly the sheep. Dolly was a sheep born in 1996 who was the first cloned mammal derived from an adult cell. So Dolly, she died at age 6 in, you'll never guess, 2003, left a scientific legacy that was hugely influential and impactful, in part because her successful birth after over 500 failed attempts proved that you could take a cell from an adult mammal and essentially reprogram it using a technology called nuclear transfer to create a clone. So Dolly had been created using a cell from an adult sheep's udder. Throughout the rest of the 90s and early 2000s, there were other cloning experiments, but 2003 marks a standout year for the achievements and the discourse around the ethical ramifications of this kind of scientific endeavor. Part of the discourse, I think, has to do with the fact that right around New Year's Eve 2002, as 2003 was approaching, a company called Clonaid announced that they had produced the first human clone. Clonaid is a really interesting and bizarre company. It's owned by a religious sect whose theology is based on the idea that aliens created humans through cloning, and now humanity's mission on Earth is to continue cloning. Clonaid starts promoting their human clone in late December 2002, and by early January, it's, of course, huge news. It's all over the papers, in part because of the company's suspicious PR tactics, but also the fact that Clonaid refused to allow any genetic testing on the baby to confirm that it was, in fact, a clone. Then, on January 4th, 2003, Clonaid announced the birth of a second human-cloned baby. Again, they had no evidence to back up this claim. So, just 4 days later, on January 8th, a bill was introduced into the House of Representatives called the Human Cloning Prohibition Act of 2003. And shortly thereafter, a similar bill was introduced in the Senate, which was never voted upon, even though it had passed in the House. In October of 2003, the United Nations took up the issue of human cloning, but essentially delayed any kind of resolution for another 2 years on it. Even with the panic around human cloning raging in early 2003, there were major and important developments in animal cloning that year. Dolly the sheep's February 2003 death raised a lot of questions about the efficacy of the cloning science, but on April 1st, researchers cloned two bantangs, which is a species of wild cattle from Asia, using frozen cells from an animal that had died in 1980. Later in 2003, scientists in Spain cloned a Pyrenean ibex, a kind of wild goat species that had gone extinct in 2000. The cloned ibex died shortly after its birth due to a lung defect, making it the first species to go extinct twice. In June, scientists in Italy produced the first cloned horse named Prometea. A few other clones from 2003, Ralph, the first cloned rat, and Idaho Gem, the first cloned mule. I also have to mention that the Star Wars movie that came out in 2002 was Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones. And in 2003, there was the Cartoon Network show Star Wars Clone Wars. So that's just a lot of clone stuff in the popular imagination for 1 year. While the scientific and political establishments grappled with these developments in cloning, there were fewer overt discussions about the kind of conformity and standards promoted through America's Next Top Model. Yes, we're circling back to America's Next Top Model. Cycle one of the series premiered on May 20th, 2003 on UPN and aired through July. The first season is, I think, really a standout in America's Next Top Model because it's so unlike any of the future seasons that you think of when you think of America's Next Top Model. It has a really low production budget. It's brand new. It has nothing to reference. So it felt raw. It felt more real somehow, more like actually representative of what being a model could really be like. This week, I talked with writer, producer, and co-host of the Bad Boy podcast, Zoe Klar, about Tyra, the women, and the drama of Cycle One, and how we remember the show from watching it 20 years ago. So this is episode 4, America's Next Top Model. And don't forget to stay tuned after the discussion for our song of the week.
Okay, I'm Zoe Klar. And in 2003, I was 13.
Do you have any prominent memories of 03?
My bat mitzvah.
Uh-huh.
You know it.
I know it.
September 21st.
Amazing.
Huge day in history. That definitely stands out because, look, I wasn't popular. But I unfortunately had my bat mitzvah on the same day as a kid who was.
Yeah.
And everyone went to his bar mitzvah and not mine. and they all got really sick airbrush tees. But joke's on them because I had sumo wrestling.
Your theme was sumo wrestling?
No, but remember those like big outfits?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You had like the balloon, like the... You had like a classic bat mitzvah party.
Did you?
No.
Well, yours was in 2003. Mine was
in September 8th, 2003. Yeah.
Wow, twins.
Twins. September 03 bat mitzvahs.
Wow, yeah. Okay. And you didn't have any... Well, you had no games?
No games.
What?
No, I mean... We did a weird thing, you know, we did the service in the morning, mm-hmm. and then instead of having a party, we like rented a huge bus and we drove out to the city of industry to this diner where my uncle knew the owner of the diner. It was like a Greek diner with like roller waitresses.
Oh my God. I've never heard the story of your bat mitzvah before.
I think because I honestly was like, I'm so embarrassed by it.
No,
I'm
but
so like it's so weird.
Yeah, my bat mitzvah was actually at a nightclub.
Oh wow, in the city,
because my godfathers planned it, and they were caterers, and so they did the catering, and they also chose the venue, which was a nightclub, and we had to leave by 11 because at 11 p.m. the burlesque show started.
Oh wow!
So as all of us were pouring out. The burlesque crowd was coming in, and there was definitely a blow up doll.
Wow.
Ready to take my spot as bat mitzvah girl.
I bet everyone who went to that other kid's bar mitzvah
fucking
wished that they could have seen the burlesque crowd.
You know that
in and of itself was like enough to get people there.
You're right.
To go to a nightclub in NYC.
So sick.
Come on.
I mean, it wasn't cool to the people at that school though, because they were like, let's go to the rainbow room. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were such a rainbow room crowd.
What were the trends in the New York City private school when we were seventh, eighth grade?
I mean, I get all of it so conflated with each other, but like, I guess a juicy jumpsuit,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
That was big for this era. Yeah.
Huge. You know, some people definitely had cell phones. I don't know about the cell phones that came out in that time. I think I had a Motorola peanut phone.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound right?
Yeah, yeah. I had a similar one.
And
it was like the one from Charlie's Angels.
Okay, I'll believe you.
Yeah.
So definitely that. Definitely cell phone charms.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, you know, latex belts that had huge holes in them.
Yeah. We see some of those in this series.
Oh, yeah. The series is really such a mwah into the fashion of that time. Like,
absolutely.
Truly a horrifying time. And I was also thinking about low-rise jeans.
Yeah.
As I do.
Yeah.
And
they're coming back to haunt us.
I know.
Yeah.
But they couldn't have come at a worse time. But yeah, no, 2003, low-rise jeans, light wash, boot cut.
Oh, yeah.
You know, those jeans that just had like the tiniest little zipper.
Yeah,
like,
it was maybe just, like, 2 inches of zipper.
Two.
Maximum.
But also so many pockets.
Yeah, so many pockets.
It's like how you like stuck between low-rise tight jeans and pocket-filled cargo pants.
Yeah.
Such a weird time to be alive.
Such a weird time to be a teenager.
Yeah.
And to like have a body that's growing.
It's disgusting.
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 Okay, well, let's talk about America's Next Top Model.
I would love nothing more because we just spent 4 hours watching it. Is that breaking the fourth wall too hard?
No. So do you remember when America's Next Top Model premiered?
I don't remember like the day it premiered, but I definitely remember it being like appointment viewing for me and my mom. And I know, not to, you know, switch gears too hard, but I know Queer Eye also came out in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another show my mom and I watched together.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know what it was. And we also watched Animal Precinct, which was on Animal Planet. It was like about the ASPCA going in and rescuing like pit bulls and stuff.
That's cool.
I guess. but yeah, anyway, I definitely watched the show with my mom.
What impression or impact did watching the show have on you?
I think like you don't realize how much you're internalizing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we watched a couple episodes of season one, an episode from season three. And it's like, In the first episode ever, they're doing a weigh-in.
Yeah. And they're showing everyone's height and weight
on the screen.
On screen. Yeah.
And they're shamed if they're too skinny.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're shamed if they're not skinny enough. And, you know, then there's everyone in the middle who are like sort of going at the two sides. And it's like a weird, you know, in my mind, what I remember is like constantly wanting to be thinner.
Yeah.
And that being my takeaway was like, well, I mean, I was fully convinced I could be a model after watching the show.
Yeah.
My main takeaway was like every time I'm going to the mall, I'm at risk of being scouted because I'm such a drop dead diva or whatever. Like, I think that
was a big takeaway for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Was like anybody. If this could happen to Adrian or Shannon.
Yeah.
Two small town girlies.
Certainly.
It could happen to you.
Yeah. And it never happened to me.
Yeah. So, not yet.
Not yet. I haven't aged out yet, even though the 26-year-old on season one is like practically geriatric. Yeah. They really treated her so old.
Yeah, I mean, it's also offensive that like the oldest person who was like the quote unquote mother of the group was also happened to be the quote unquote plus size model.
Yeah, and like plus size on season one versus plus size on season three, vastly different.
Completely different, yeah.
I mean, I assume, and we barely watched season three, and I don't really remember. I remember in later seasons, like when girls would gain weight throughout the season or lose weight throughout the season, they'd be like, you come in a plus size girl, you have to stay a plus size girl. Or you'd come in a not plus size girl, you have to stay that way. I feel like that was such like the you cannot change. And they
you're in a category.
They put it all like in this industry, you're cast this way or that way. They always say shit about the industry. Like, in this industry, if you're late, you're going to lose the client $17 million. It's like, yeah. Okay, Tyra.
Absolutely. Everything is an overall lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, we are in an interesting moment for Tyra where we really watch her transform in this series. And in the episodes that we watched, you know, we see Tyra come in almost as like a peer, even though she's kind of a role model.
Yeah.
And then by the end, she's like giving inspirational speeches. She's giving, you
tough
know,
talks.
Tough
also.
Talks, which become, of course, a staple of the show. I mean, the most iconic moment of the show is her yelling at that girl in season six, I believe.
We were all rooting for you.
We were all rooting for you.
That was iconic, though.
When my mother yells at this, it's because she loves me. I was rooting for you. We were all rooting for you. How dare you? Learn something from this.
She definitely, and we saw that change happen.
Yeah.
You're right. It's like she has this like peer, like the intro of the show is like people come up to me all the time and say like, how do I become a model? I want to be a model. And she's like, well, this is how, this is the show that's going to make you a model.
Yeah.
And then halfway through, she was like, oh shit, but I'm a producer on this show.
I think that you could see it in her eyes in the middle of the season when she starts getting tough on them and giving kind of lectures.
Yeah.
She feels a surge of power.
Tyra's soapbox, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, like Janice Dickinson, meanest person I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
Absolute freaking harsh, harsh.
Yeah.
That's
the kind of person who's like, oh, well, I had to be sexually assaulted, so you should too.
Totally. Totally. And Tyra's always like one of the world's first supermodels in her intro. And Janice Dickinson's like the first. It's like, Janice.
Every episode.
No one's keeping track. Okay. No one cares. But Janice is incredibly consistent in her bitchiness and harshness. Like,
yeah. That- and also harsh about things that are unchangeable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, harsh about
skin texture.
Skin texture. Your body,
yeah,
you know, no one's going to want a plus-sized girl.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, she's been cast on this show. You know, you can't just eliminate her for being in that category when that's the reason she was cast. I mean, that's kind of mind-boggling to me.
Right. You're right. It's like they were always casting for diversity purposes, but there was no way any of them would ever win.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because in this season, in season one, their diversity comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in our like modern 2023 lens, we're sort of trained to look for those intersectional moments. Like we have Ebony, who's like this very powerful black lesbian woman who's very like open about that.
Yeah.
And she's very dark skinned. And you have Robin, who's, you know, who's black and evangelical. And you have Mercedes, who's Latina. And then that's kind of like all that the only way that it's mentioned.
Yeah.
Whereas like the diversity in the house ends up being like eight militant atheists versus
it's true
versus the evangelicals.
Yeah, there is a big divide between the Bibles and the non-Bibles.
Yeah.
Like it's, I feel like the overall theme of that entire season, the overarching theme is about religion.
Absolutely.
And like, you know, the nudity shoots, which like throughout the entire show, there's always a person who doesn't want to do the nudity shoots because of the Lord himself. And, you know, it's the same thing where it's like, if you want to be a model, you're going to have to get naked. And you should know this by now.
And God will still love you.
Yeah.
God loves models.
Yeah. Even if it's fake nudity, even if you're wearing a G-string, yeah. It's okay.
A G-string that they can edit out.
Yeah.
With a double strap.
They really went in on the double strap.
Yeah. I mean, the Bible is kind of a character mm-hmm. in this season of television.
Totally. And she pops up.
Yeah.
All the time. In the limo with the Frenchman. It's just like anytime Robin can pull out a Bible, she has it on her hip ready to go.
Yeah.
I'm like, I wonder if the producers are like, here, just read your Bible in this limo. I do feel like it was an interesting, because you said American Idol came out 2002.
Yeah. So the first season of American Idol comes out in 02.
Mm-hmm.
You know, The Bachelor comes out in 02 as well.
Mm-hmm.
The Bachelorette will come out in 03. So
interesting.
This is really like
it's
the
coming.
Emergent. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think what's so unique about America's Next Top Model is it's a competition show like yeah. American Idol.
Yeah.
But you have the home life aspect of it too.
Totally.
Like the real world. Or like, I guess they have that on The Bachelor. That's a huge part of The Bachelor. But The Bachelor is not a competition in the same way. It's
right.
not a talent competition.
Yeah.
Where, like, this show is just as much about them at the house in the model loft with the photos of Tyra everywhere as it is about them doing these photo shoots on the roof.
Yeah, I think this is kind of one of the first shows that really, in the reality format,
mm-hmm.
like, takes this idea of you have to be talented, sure,
mm.
but personality and popularity feels yeah. like it's equally as much a part of it.
Yeah, they do talk about personality a lot on
yeah.
this show. And they really harp on like, but they're also just as judgmental about it.
Oh, totally.
You know, it's like either you're too fat or too thin, you're too cheery, you're too upset. Like Adrian, I guess, is a tomboy and they like always made fun of her voice
mm-hmm.
and the way she walked and like how she carried herself. And it was always this, I don't know, it was a point of judgment. For
yeah,
them.
That she wasn't she didn't have the personality of a typical sort of feminine
right.
model.
Right.
But at the same time, I feel like Adrian becomes the blueprint
mm-hmm.
because she is the most improved.
Mm.
And ultimately, that kind of becomes what this competition is about, is
mm-hmm.
like, who can Tyra form?
Totally.
Who can Tyra
force
create?
Into the mold?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Adrian takes notes.
She does.
She slicks her hair back, you
She's
know, whereas the other
the
contestants. Exactly. She puts her hair in the clip, whereas the other contestants don't take that feedback.
Yeah.
And I feel like in future seasons, they're much more forceful about that. We're
mm-hmm.
giving you this advice to further your career.
Yeah. And they're also way more judgy in future seasons about what they wear to judging. I remember
Absolutely.
That being such a huge part of it and being like, take off those earrings. They did it. And I don't know. Robin wore that ridiculous hat and they made her take it off, which like, thank God, because if that was on my screen for one more second. But they do get way more like specific about that type of thing and presenting like a model and acting like a model, which of course is all fucking made up anyway.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Tyra, I think, walked her last Victoria's Secret Angel runway in like 2005.
Okay.
So she's still going.
She's
at
still
this
going.
Time.
She's still a
yeah.
model.
She's still a model.
A working model.
And then this is kind of her pivot. To
mm-hmm. TV.
Yeah.
And she pivoted.
She pivoted.
I mean, this show, like, I feel like it had way more of an impact on reality television than it did on the modeling industry.
Yeah.
Like, I can, looking at it now, like, I watch every single fucking version of RuPaul's Drag Race, and I can see it.
Yeah.
I can see how this influenced RuPaul's Drag Race. I could see how it influenced Top Chef.
Absolutely.
It's just the celebrity host mm-hmm. that's like sort of a expert, you know, like whatever, judging, encouraging sometimes the younger generation.
Yeah, they're giving 10% mentor, 80% judge, 10%
dictator.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really break them down. But yeah, you can see it, and you could see the like pressure cooker ness of the show change from season to season. Like in the first season, I was shocked at how often they got to leave the apartment. Yeah. I was like, oh, they're letting them go out in the city. They're letting them go around Paris and go to Jim Morrison's grave. Like, what a thrill. Yeah. But I feel like in later seasons, they realized the more they can control them and, like, really fuck with them, the better the show gets.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the reality television model.
Yeah. I will say, like, other than Queer Eye, it was kind of my first exposure to gay men in a way.
Even the inclusion or the prominence of Jay Alexander.
Mm-hmm. Completely, like, the first season had an utter lack of Miss Jay.
Yeah. Miss Jay, and I think a lot of, like, the queer sort of creatives around who ultimately are the ones who really, like, cultivate the talent, are the art directors, are the stylists, like, are the ones who really, like, prop up these women who are ultimately, like, being photographed for the male gaze, of course.
Naturally.
They take a lot more prominence in later seasons.
Yeah.
And that has to be a call by Tyra. I mean, Tyra, for all her shit, it does feel like she's sort of taken a back seat because of all the heat she got in the last several years.
Race swapping photo shoot. Yeah. I mean, that was bad.
Listen, there were a lot of really cringe things that were done by her hand. You know, 100%. The decisions that she made. Ultimately, I can't speak for Tyra, so I don't know if she's like, I'm doing this because I believe that beauty comes in all colors. Like, she says that in the very first episode, all shapes, all sizes, all colors. Like, at the same time, it's like, you can't help but notice that the final three of season one are like three waifish white women.
They are.
Who are like just so traditionally beautiful, so skinny.
Yeah. Well, Elisa's a nerd.
Adrian's a tomboy. And Shannon is a Christian.
So that's everyone fits diversity.
Into a
really,
yeah, everyone fits into a neat, you know.
Yeah.
A neat little
well,
box.
Well, Elisa's too smart for her own good. She's so condescending. So,
I mean, in an iconic 2003 crossover moment, she's wearing a Shins t-shirt.
She's
in
wearing
one
a Shins t-shirt.
Yeah.
She is.
Of course, we know later she ends up dating the keyboardist from the Shins who assaults her and is arrested.
I did not know that, but I learned that today.
Yeah. Just a crazy crossover
of
convergence. Totally. But it also tells us a lot about Elise and her alt identity.
So alt. Well, so she was going to go to med school, which isn't very alt of her.
No. And she never did.
Yeah. No, she never did. Adrian feels like the real... What you said earlier about like it being like she's the oddball and like it ends up like kind of working in her favor and it being like celebrated. First of all, not how I remember her at all. Like how she actually is not how I remember her. I remember her being like just this elegant, beautiful woman. And it just goes to show that when I was 13 watching this show, just because she's like a tomboy who dropped out of high school, it didn't clock as something weird or different. Like I thought Shannon, the Bible girl, was weird.
Yeah.
I mean, and she was.
She totally was.
Yeah. Not as weird as Robin, the Bible woman.
The Bible woman. Well, when I think of George W. Bush and I think of the Bush era, I think of evangelicals.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're right. Shannon would have loved Bush.
Of course.
Yeah.
Shannon loved Bush.
Shannon loved Bush.
Speaking of Bush.
Okay. Oh, God. What?
Episode one, these women getting their bikini waxes.
Oh. They did do that. Yeah. They did do that. They really showed more than you would have thought.
Yeah.
I mean, Tyra's like was a huge name.
Yeah.
And a huge draw. And you know, to her credit, like not every person, not every model can be a host. And
totally.
She embraced the role and she had a personality. And like, she, it doesn't, I mean, a lot of it was probably fake.
Her personality?
Yeah.
It reads fake.
It does read fake.
You know, it reads fake, but that was also part of the appeal of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think to get to the level of success that Tyra was trying to convince these women she had, she had to be fake. Like, it's also selling the story that this whole industry is kind of fake.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they're telling Adrian, like, don't talk like that. Walk like that.
Like, the blatant racism on the show is fucking wild.
Yeah.
And with the voice thing specifically, I don't remember what season it was. I think her name was Danielle, and I believe she won.
Mm-hmm.
She has a gap in her tooth.
Yeah.
And I think they shaved it to make it bigger, or they wanted to shave it to make it bigger. There was something with shaving the gap.
No, they wanted it to be smaller.
Oh, they wanted to fill the gap.
This was part of the reason why Tyra was sort of reevaluated in the public discourse.
Was because they wanted to tighten up that gap.
That clip resurfaced.
But she had a southern accent.
Yeah.
And
they didn't like it.
They did not like it.
No.
They did not like it at all, but they had no problem with Shannon's southern accent. I had a problem with it. I found it irritating. But
Shannon, who was from California.
Was she?
They kept calling her Miss California. But maybe that was just because her hair was blonde.
I think it was because her hair was blonde and she had a lot of teeth.
She had a lot of teeth. Perfect teeth, she kept saying.
Yeah,
or maybe Adrian said that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So Adrian to say that.
One of the most sort of chilling moments was in the makeover episode of season one.
Yep.
And Ebony, who already had sort of a close shave.
Yeah, it was like a near buzz.
It was a near buzz. She had a little tuft.
Yeah, she had a little tuft that was just, I guess it was like kind of mohawk-y, but not even.
And they didn't have the right clippers to cut her hair. I thought it was really horrible that her complaint about how inappropriate it was that they didn't have the proper equipment or personnel to give her a proper haircut was grouped in with the same people who like complained about having their hair straightened.
Agree. Yeah, it was like, you know, they would list the people who are crying. They'd be like, well, she cried because she had to take out her $1,500 weave. She cried because, you know, she didn't want to go blonde. And Ebony's over here crying because they gave her a horrible haircut because they didn't know what they were doing, because they were in like a very white salon and she is not a white person. Yeah, it was. And they were laughing at her when she was complaining about it. And they were like really disrespectful.
There's like probably a whole discourse around like Tyra and blackness that I feel inequipped to discuss.
Yeah,
but
agree.
She's constantly like, I don't go around saying I'm black, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I also feel like in her role, she clearly cares about giving opportunity to women of color and like mentoring them in specific ways. And so it did feel really, it just felt really retrograde to have this contestant treated this way for a complaint that was so legitimate.
So we leave a little tough?
I didn't even like the way the woman was cutting my hair and the way they were having a conversation in front of me.
Should we write her name in there?
Yeah.
It is uneven.
Yeah.
They messed up shaving her head that bad.
It is very upsetting to an African-American woman to go into a salon and the person to do her hair incorrectly. It is very inappropriate. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Ebony, she just gets going and cannot stop. And it's a little bit weird.
There were some areas that it's like kind of shocking to see. For example, that like they clearly filmed this in a hotel room that's tiny.
Very small hotel room.
The production budget is very small.
Almost depressingly small.
Yeah. Like, so much so that Tyra's like, I put them in one room because that's what being a model is like.
No, it's not, Tyra.
Yeah. It's like, we get it. Your production budget was really low, you know?
And by like season whatever, you know, by season 7, they're walking into this huge mansion.
Yeah.
And this, it's like, they have a quote model's loft and it's like 4 rooms with 12 beds in each room. It's like wild.
Right. Like 2 girls have to literally sleep in trundle beds.
Yeah, they're trundle beds. I forgot about the trundle beds.
Yeah.
What an absurd twist.
Another thing that's, I think, also like speaks to the sort of evolution of not just the show, but like the format of reality TV in general is like in this season, it's really cut and dry. Like there does seem to be this sense of like, if you're a model, you're judged on like your walk and you're judged on your photo. And yeah, like some of your photo shoots are going to be uncomfortable mm-hmm. or like going to push you. They're going to push you into places that you're not used to mm-hmm. going, mm-hmm. right? You might have to be naked. You might have a snake on you. In future seasons, we have like, you have to walk across pebbles in a river wearing 9-inch heels. Like there's this push to the extreme.
Totally.
In like, future seasons, whereas this actually feels like it's just sort of the purest of like, these are kind of like, this is if you were a model, you would be given these assignments in the most basic form.
Right. It's like, you're going to be naked selling jewelry. Fine. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, a beauty shot with a snake, like, I've seen wilder things. You're right. In later seasons, they're like, okay, jump off this building and look pretty. You have one shot. Go.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no problem.
Yeah. Like, we're going to electrocute you. And
and Tyra's like, sometimes when you're a model, you get electrocuted and you can't let it impact your face. And I see the electrocution all over your face.
Yeah. You don't have what it takes.
You don't have what it takes. Where's your neck?
Where's... Longer neck.
Longer neck. Your hands look like a claw. It's like, you were stabbing me in the neck.
Adrian's club foot.
Oh, God. Well, I guess she has huge feet. So
she does. I mean, she does have big feet.
She does. At the end of the day, she does. You can't deny it.
But that was also, you know, her feet only come up in that first episode.
Well,
she really learns.
She hid those from Janice's cruelty. She hid those clompers for the rest of the season. she did learn.
I mean, I think that probably the strangest challenge was definitely the prove yourself as a lady to these French men.
That was so weird.
There's no way that that's actually relevant.
The challenges definitely changed.
Yeah.
Because you're right. Yeah, they were in France. It was the final four. They had to like eat escargot with these four schlubby fucking French dudes, and at the end the men picked which one they thought was like the most ladylike,
which one I guess embodied the spirit of couture.
Oh yeah, it was about embodying the spirit of couture naturally.
Yeah.
Anyway, Adrian won, so clearly it was not about like being a socialite. It was a personality contest.
It was a personality contest,
and obviously she was gonna win that.
No question.
Because
although,
she
I
ate
mean,
the
Elise
escargot.
Was close. Elise
she
was close.
She was. But like, she ate the escargot.
And she engaged them in conversation, whereas Shannon, 18-year-old Shannon, didn't know how to interact.
Robin was knee-deep in her Bible. She couldn't be bothered.
Robin not saying one word, reading her Bible in the limo.
So good.
Unbelievable.
So good.
Iconic.
Honestly, yeah.
I feel like if I were the oldest person in the group and were being forced to charm a group of hideous...
So ugly.
You know, skeezy Frenchmen.
I've never seen greasier baguettes in my life. Like, they were so ugly.
They... You know, she said, these guys aren't real socialites. Like,
she did
I'm
say
not
that.
Even going to participate in this. It's like,
let's go and party all night long.
These cat daddy, lustful type of men were there. You could tell by their conversation. They weren't socializing. That's the reason why I tuned them out.
That's all she did for like 4 hours with these dudes was read the Bible.
You know, Robin, for her getting the villain edit, you have to give her credit that she really did say, these are my values and I'm sticking to them.
You're right. And she definitely got the villain edit.
She would have been kicked off a lot earlier in future seasons for being so unwilling to bend to Tyra's demands.
Right. And I feel like they did, I don't know why they kept her around, because it's not like her photo shoots were that incredible, but they kept reiterating, like, this is what women look like. Like, we need to keep her on because, like, women look like Robin. Like, no one looks like a 5'8 stunning person.
Robin's 5'10.
Oh.
There was, like, no one under 5'9 the whole season.
Wow. Yeah. Remember the short girl season?
Yeah.
They're like,
revolutionary.
They really opened my eyes. Like, I never saw short representation like that in the media.
I do feel like Tyra's influence and this idea of a personal brand she's planting that seed in 2003.
Yeah.
More than any other like reality TV.
Definitely.
You know, judge, contestant.
Well, because
any
like
of that.
American Idol, you win a record deal.
Yeah.
Which is big. I mean, for Kelly Clarkson and no one else. But it was big for Kelly Clarkson. And Tyra's whole thing is really about like, what is your one thing? You know, she'd be like, you look like an alien. Use it. You have the worst nose I've ever seen. That's your superpower. Yeah. Like, you know, she would put you down really bad. But also try to like say, what is the thing that makes you you and what makes you unique? And like, what is the thing that is going to make you a superstar or whatever?
Yeah. And build that.
And it was usually the thing that she hated the most. She'd be like, Elise, your thing is that you're so smart. And you need to use that to your benefit, but also you're so smart and you're so condescending and I hate you and you're out of the competition.
I admire your intelligence. I think you are so smart. But one thing with that intelligence is it can intimidate people. And there's a way to use that intelligence in a way that doesn't feel like you're maybe putting down other people or sounding derogatory.
Her whole like last interrogation where she, you know, they say to her, do you believe that modeling is more than just beauty? And mm-hmm. they sort of, but this is the reason why she's sent home, is because she ultimately doesn't agree with Tyra,
right?
Is because she doesn't take Tyra's lesson.
Yeah,
Tyra wants her to say, through this experience I've learned that modeling is about the inside and the outside.
Yeah,
which is ultimately the sort of message that Tyra's trying to instill in people in right. every season.
Also, she's constantly trying to prove that it's a skill.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can be pretty and be a horrible model in front of the camera. You can have, like, the best face in the world, and then the second you try to walk down the runway, you fall on it and you look like a big dum-dum. Like, she's, it seems like her, like, goal is to prove that she is a skilled individual. I do want to talk about the product placement real fast.
Yeah.
I mean, now, when we watch reality TV, let's talk about Top Chef because I know we both watch it. It's like, and you're going to win $100,000 furnished by Saran Wrap.
Yeah.
On this show, we were watching the first episode and you were like, why is everyone wearing baby fat?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is that zipper? Is that baby fat? Why is she wearing baby fat? Then Kimora Lee Simmons is one of the judges and the final runway is a baby fat runway.
I loved the baby fat integration
mm-hmm.
because
it felt seamless.
It felt seamless.
I was gaslit.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I kept saying to you, what's that cat logo? Why is she wearing a cat necklace?
Yeah. You were like, I need that necklace.
I need a cat necklace.
It worked on you.
Yeah.
Even after 20 years.
Totally.
Of having like Saran Wrap shoved down our throats.
Yeah.
You're still falling for it.
I'm falling for it.
Well, because it was such a perfect integration for the season.
Baby fat is also like such a distinct early 2000s brand.
Totally. And you know, like the Marie Claire fashion editor was mm-hmm. also one of the judges. That wasn't shoved down our throats.
Bo Killian. Yeah.
But I also didn't come away being like, huh, I need a subscription to Marie Claire. I was like,
no, but they are the only reading material we see in the series is the Bible mm-hmm. or Marie Claire, which
which is my Bible.
Also, yeah, exactly. It's like you know what the militant atheists are reading, and
totally.
Then you know what the Christians are reading.
And it also, like, for whatever reason, I'm like, oh, Wilhelmina models, like the prestige, because that was the prize. Like, I would not know what the fuck Wilhelmina models was when I was 13 if it was not for her being Tyra. But I know what it is now. And I even still, when I think about it, I'm like, oh damn, that's a good modeling agency. Like, I don't fucking know.
I have no idea.
I couldn't tell you a good one
and
from a bad
Wilhelmina
one.
And Wilhelmina doesn't last beyond season one. Interestingly, they move to Ford.
Can we just talk real quickly about, Amanda from season 3 saying that her son was conceived to the second on 9/11?
Yeah.
She was like, I'm a mother and I'm so proud of being a mother. And my son was conceived to the second on September 11th. Must be weird for the kid to know that.
Must be weird for the kid to know that everyone knows that.
I mean, what a beautiful time to be conceived. I do think an interesting thing about 2003, though, is its proximity to 9/11.
Oh, totally. I mean, mm-hmm. so we know that the girlies go shopping because mm-hmm. they have extra time in New York.
Yeah.
And Adrian is wearing an NYPD shirt.
She is.
And then at another time, she's wearing an FDNY shirt.
It's a tank top. It's a spaghetti strap.
A spaghetti strap. Yeah.
She is. Yeah.
And that, like, lit this little, mm-hmm. you know, light bulb in my head of like, oh, we're in New York post 9/11. Yeah. And this is how it's being represented.
Right after 9/11 and even like through 2002. We were in this like lovey-dovey phase
mm-hmm.
where we were all like American flags, like let's, you know, remember
freedom for
eyes.
Yeah.
Like let's embrace each other and take advantage of our time that we have. And then by 2003, it feels like that faded and like the jadedness of our generation. And I guess, you know, I guess they're old, elder millennials, we'll say.
Geriatric millennial.
Geriatric millennial,
term.
Yeah. The geriatric millennials really, you know, you can see it. You can see it in them how, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm just reading into it too much.
I don't think there's such a thing as reading into it too much. I think you're right. I mean, I think that like part of it is also represented through this Christian atheist
totally.
Thing.
Yes. Right? Yeah, you're so right.
Let's talk about Adrian and Elise. And there's a moment in season at the end when they're deciding who's the winner.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, fashion is edgy now. Fashion is edgier.
Mm-hmm.
When they call Adrian the future and they say, oh, she's this punk rock girl. You know, she's constantly making the like punk rock finger gesture. That's like her.
It's her little
thing.
That's
her personal brand.
It is her personal brand. Yeah.
And Elise, who has this sort of like pixie, the shins.
Mm-hmm.
And then that versus like catalogy Shannon.
Yeah.
It does feel like there is this acknowledgement of a more like alternative.
The incoming like, of something different. Tyra loved to make broad proclaimments about fashion.
Yeah.
And every season she'd be like, you're the future of fashion. You're the future of fashion. She said that every single time.
Yeah.
So this was the first time she said it. So maybe she believed it actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see why she would say that because it is in direct opposition to like the Paris Hiltons that are being shoved down our throats.
Yeah. Okay. So before we finish off our analysis of America's Next Top Model.
Certainly, yeah.
In the spirit of 2003.
Yeah.
I'm excited. What are the aspects of America's Next Top Model's premiere season
mm-hmm.
that you loves?
Okay. I loves the competition meets real world.
Yeah.
I loves that. I feel like that's such a unique thing that America's Next Top Model did that is now so prevalent in every reality show. Not every, but a lot. I loves Adrian. I loves that they made Adrian lovable and like interesting and like a full human being. Like I think with a lot of reality shows now, there's like a characterization mm-hmm. where they're like, they do put people in buckets. And even though they did it with her, where they're like, you're the punk rock girl, you're the Jesus freak, whatever. They still felt more well-rounded.
Yeah.
Because like Shannon was like, I love Jesus, but I can be goofy and wear weird glasses. You know, it wasn't like as trying to shove people, like the edits weren't as honed as they are now. Even Elise, like the judges are like, you're smart and that's your thing. But like Elise was so much more than just the smart person. And we saw that as viewers, even if the judges didn't. So I do feel like the over-editing of reality TV hadn't taken over yet. And there wasn't this like, we need to build characters out of these people. It was like, we can just let them be people. And maybe, you know, I do think that changed. You could even see that change by season 3.
Absolutely. My loves it for America's Next Top Model season 1 is seeing Tyra at a pure transitional moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before she sort of became before she created a character for herself to play as the host of the show.
Yeah.
When she saw herself as this very fluid entity in the show, kind of a mentor, kind of a teacher, kind of a judge, kind of a dictator, kind of, you know, kind of a creative director.
Yeah.
There's a brief purity and a brief moment where I feel like we get to see something very sort of real about Tyra. Mm-hmm. And I loves that.
My other loves, Daniel Bizarro.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
No.
No.
We love Daniel Bizarro,
even though he made them pose in the freezing cold.
Daniel Bizarro and his assistant Elizabeth Moss.
Yeah, not the
not to be confused. Different with Elizabeth Moss.
Different Elizabeth Moss.
Yeah. I loves how, well, this is a double-edged loves.
Okay.
You know, I loves that it made it feel accessible to people.
Yeah.
That you could watch that show and look in the mirror and see a model in yourself. And as a cultural force, I just feel like there was nothing like that before.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just the age.
Yeah, and we were the perfect slash worst age.
Exactly. And that's why it's a double-edged sword. It's like the other side of that is that you simultaneously get the feeling that it could be you, that you have the potential in you. And then the other message that you're getting is you're not 114 pounds, 5'10", like Elise.
Yeah. Also, like, if you're not getting discovered at the mall, it's because of something that's inherently wrong with you.
Right.
Which, for me, it was just wrong place, wrong time. I'm really glad that we watched it, because I don't think it's given enough credit for what it did for reality TV. Loves it. It's my Bible.
That's another thing I loves, is, like, what a time capsule it is to, like, Bush era cultural differences.
And in young women, these 19, 20, 21, and if you're ancient, like Robin, 26-year-old women are, like, embodying that divide. Yeah. So drastically. And you can see how so much of it is, like, self-inflicted. It's like they're forcing themselves to choose between, okay, either I'm in love with Jesus or I'm a degenerate, and, like, there's no spot for in between.
America's Next Top Model.
Yeah.
Change the game.
No doubt.
Tyra, problematic queen, but we appreciate her contributions.
No doubt. I appreciate her contributions to the world of reality TV modeling.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't know.
Yeah.
But reality TV, I watch a lot of it, and I can for sure, like, she did something. Her and Ken Mock.
And actually a later producer of the show, Kenya Barris.
No.
Yeah.
I just got chills.
Yeah. Any last comments on America's Next Top Model?
I would say I have two photos in my hand. Two beautiful women stand before me, but I only have one photo in my hand. This photo represents a girl who's still in the running to becoming America's Next Top Model.
Loves it. So this week's O3 throwback song of the week was actually requested by multiple people when I first launched the podcast, and that's probably because it's one of the most enduring anthems of that year, Inda Club by 50 Cent. The first single off of 2003's best-selling album, Get Rich or Die Tryin', Inda Club hit number one on March 8th and stayed at the top of the charts for 9 weeks. Go, 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 shorty. It's your birthday. We gon' party like it's your birthday. We gon' sip a Bacardi like it's your birthday. And you know we don't give a fuck, cause that's your birthday. You can find me in the club, bottle full of bub. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Class of 03. We'll be back next week with another new episode that I'm really excited about. So please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, rate and review us. If you want to nominate a song of the week or share a story about 2003, you can get in touch at classof03pod@gmail.com. Call us at 724-CLASS-03. Or follow us and message us on Instagram at classof03pod. Thank you again to Zoe Klar for joining me today in conversation about America's Next Top Model. I loved it, and I loved watching 4 hours of the show with you. You can follow Zoe on Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok at Zoe Klar, and listen to her podcast, Bad Boy Pod. Our show is written, produced, and edited by me, Helen Grossman.
And our theme song is by Luke Schwartz and Evan Joseph of Sawtooth. Our show art is designed by Maddie Herbert of Dame Studio. Class dismissed.